The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Welcome to the AC Podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger.
Terry Crosby.
And yes, Andy has returned.
That is not Daniel. It is actually Andy.
I am back. Yeah,
there's... You heard Daniel taking over for you that.
I did. That I did. When I was on vacation,
you did
I
a good
actually,
impersonation
actually listened
of you.
To the podcast.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't think he did a good impersonation. No.
Oh, come on now.
But then again, I immediately knew it wasn't me, obviously.
Yeah. Something tells me.
If I was confused on that, you should be concerned. It was good times though. For those of you listeners who are unaware, I was in Thailand with my family, had a amazing vacation, and I did something, by the way, that was fantastic and I highly recommend. When we went over to Thailand, what we did is started off our vacation by serving with missionaries that are over there that our church supports. Mm. And that was fantastic. So my boys had the opportunity to do some ministry in the slums of Bangkok and doing rice distribution and doing some children's ministry. And we did some construction work. Mm-hmm. And then we headed off to the jungles of Thailand and did some hiking and snorkeling and all kinds of stuff.
What a gift to your kids to be able to serve in that way.
It's exciting to be able to open up the world to my children. And for them to see God at work around the world and to, in some small way, they won't appreciate this now, but later they'll appreciate that I shrunk the world a little bit for them.
I overheard yesterday you talking to somebody and there was blood gushing out of your head. What was all that about?
Yeah, there were a couple amazing moments on the trip. The first one is, we went caving with our kids in the jungles. This cave is a kilometer long and there's a river that runs through it. I'm 30 seconds in, Terry, to this cave, and I'm looking at my camera, and I bash my head on the wall.
Oh.
Yeah. The guide fails to tell us. I mean, you really shouldn't need to, right, that there's a giant rock jutting out of this. Yeah. It's Thailand, Terry. Yeah, there's
holidays.
No seatbelts. There's no helmets.
Yeah, definitely, no.
You know, and I'm a, you know, my bald head, you know, just starts bleeding. And this is true. This is so funny. I mean, my face was covered in blood, right?
And imagine emerging out of that cave like that.
Well, and it's 30 seconds in. Some people haven't even gotten into the cave yet. And then they step in and they see me just gushing blood.
It's a horror movie.
It's a horror scene, right? Three of the tourists stepped out. They're like, nope, I'm not going any deeper into this. This is clearly outside my bounds of okay. So,
well, we're glad you're back.
Good to be back. And I'm looking forward to being here and hearing from Terry.
Oh,
what you've uncovered for us.
Yes.
Okay, there's a billboard in Texas I came up. It says, never be hit in school again. Exercise your religious rights. So apparently in about five different states down there, you can still spank and get whacked at school.
Oh, really?
By the principals. But the interesting part about this billboard, it's brought to you by the Satanic Temple.
Well, you took it up a notch, Terry. Congratulations.
So they are heralding the rights, the religious rights of these people to go against this smacking.
The Satanic Temple.
The Satanic Temple.
Can't say that I've ever heard of that one. This is interesting, though. I had a listener ask to me about this recently, about Satanism. And it's interesting because a lot of people think that they tend to assume that Satanism is dealing with worshiping Satan. Mm. But in fact, there's two different things happening here. There's one where it's actually just a different form of atheism.
Yeah.
They don't even believe Satan exists.
And that's Anton LaVey, when he started Satanism, he just uses Satan as the symbol of everything that he represents. He'll call it the celebration of life. This is, you know,
it's just anarchy, yeah, right?
You experience as much as you can as long as you don't hurt anybody else. That's basically it.
It's like modern day hedonism. Mm-hmm. And then the other one you would naturally assume is with satanic practices, worshiping
But I've come across another lady this week. Her name's Michelle Scott. But she's, you know, has a mantle of human rights and ethics and, you know, we need to fight for these the rights of LGBT and all these different. So it's a little different spin to it, I think, in the sense that they're taking up this mantle of rights and rights and wrongs.
And she's a Satanist?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, they'll talk about human rights and things like that because they do believe in that. The question is whether they can justify it, and I very much doubt they can.
So this form of Satanism then with that promoted this billboard is the atheism form?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, well, let's move on. We have a fascinating topic for all of you today. This was covered a number of times already. It kind of blew up on the blogosphere too, and so we thought we'd jump on the bandwagon and discuss this because it's so fascinating. We have a subscription to Time magazine, and I get these hard copies in the mail from time to time. And I got two copies, two issues back to back. One is the March 27th issue of Time magazine, and the feature story is titled Beyond He or She, and it features the photo of this person named Marie, who is a 26-year-old, I don't know, man or woman, but this person identifies as queer and non-conforming, gender non-conforming, and this feature article is basically talking about how our young people, especially the millennials, are becoming more and more open to revising their gender. Not revising their gender, but they identify as a bunch of different things. So much so that even the people that are in the LGBTQ community are having a hard time keeping up with all these new genders that are coming out. The following issue, which was the April 3rd issue, the cover was very interesting because the cover had the black background and in red bold letters it says, "Is truth dead?" It brings back the memories of that article back in the 1960s when they had the exact same style. It just said, "Is God dead?"
And they're clearly playing off of that.
Playing off of that. And the cover article, the feature article, is basically talking about how Donald Trump, the president of the United States, is not trustworthy because he makes all of these false claims. He doesn't speak the truth.
And in fact, the article is, can Trump handle the truth?
Right. Maybe okay, let's talk about the first article then, Beyond He or She. What did you guys think of that one?
Well, I thought it was interesting as well reading this and seeing that the LGBTQ community can't even keep up with all the different names and different ways in which people identify these days.
In the article, it said, 1 billion users are doing Facebook, but there's 60 options for gender.
Yeah, 60 right. On Facebook and 40
on Tinder.
On Tinder.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. And then that continues to grow. And in fact, it was more than that because what they're finding is people are just making up their own identities.
Yeah. Because some of them, I sometimes wonder, how many ways can you dissect this? If you have some 60 plus genders, And you can't even keep up with these names and you have to look it up and you're in the LGBTQ community. Sometimes I wonder how nuanced do you have to be and are these meaningful?
Well, it seems to me that nuances. One of the things that's taking place there is people don't want to be placed in a box.
Right.
And in fact, you have one of the people in the article saying that, quote, "I have a great box that I have made for myself."
Right.
Right, so that ultimately you're going to just continue to spawn this because they don't want to be placed into a box. They want to create their own box and say, "No, this is me."
And isn't it such a deadly combination, though? That sort of hyper individualistic, this is my box, and you can create whatever box you want for yourself, mixed with adolescent search for identity.
Well, I think this is probably one of the most dangerous aspects of what's taking place right now is that you've got Hollywood championing what's taking place here and making it cool and accepted to do this. And so what you have then, I've worked with teenagers a long time, mm-hmm. and I understand that when they're going through these high school years, there are a lot of high schoolers that seek attention. And they, depending upon how they can get that attention, they will, you know, be drawn in those ways. And right now, if you want to get attention, you just need to start, you know, identifying in these different ways.
What better way than...
Because then you're going to draw a lot of attention onto yourself, and you've got society right now, you know, giving you the green light to do that. And so in many ways, it's giving you all sorts of the attention that you want. The challenge there then is that actually helping the student? And is that actually what the student is even going through? We've basically built up this false dilemma for them, right? In a way for them to gain attention. Now, one of the things I thought was interesting in this that also concerns me.
Just before we move on, I guess I just want to make it really clear. We're not saying that there are no students who genuinely struggle with their sense of gender and things like that, you know, what they feel like and don't feel like.
But here, let's continue on that then, Steve, because this, I think, is an important thing. We've always known that. My wife, for example, was a tomboy growing up, and we would use terms like tomboy, and nobody thought anything weird of that, that my wife loved hanging out with the guys, and she liked doing guy things, And it's because it's funny, I was talking to my wife about this, and she was like, man, if I was growing up in today's culture, I'd be so confused. She's like, because now she's like the opposite of tomboy, right? And yeah, I mean, could you imagine you have a young adult? Yeah, I mean, so you have a high school student that maybe is a tomboy, right? And now he's got a society saying, well, you should really look into that. I mean, you might actually be a boy and you just don't know it. Right. And so now, yeah, could you imagine this high schooler going, oh man, I didn't realize that. And then starts going down the drug route or starts with regards to hormone therapies or starts getting surgeries done or whatever. And then a couple of years later, they're down the road as an adult going, wait a minute. Like, have we forgotten that teenagers are a broiling brood of hormones trying to figure out life?
That was me.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I've certainly seen it in the last few years, just within the high school, the amount of confusion that there is, you know, and that all the labels would come out. Some I've never heard before, you know, just identifying with every label that you can imagine. But I mean, on the flip side, we get labeled as well, homophobe, or you just add the phobe on the end of any of those names, and that's what we are, right? Mm-hmm. The name in the article, the other kin. Did you notice that?
Other kin, yeah.
The non-human beings.
Yeah, so this is more than just whether or not, you know, you're identifying as male or female. This is about whether or not you even identify as a human being or not.
Yeah, yeah, that was interesting.
And I know some people are tempted to think, oh, that must just be a few crazies. No, this is something that is continuing to grow. Well, one of the things that came out in the article was, again, here's another quote for you, you have an individual saying, your terms don't reflect my reality or the reality of my friends.
Yeah.
And what you get is this idea where we're encouraging people to create their own realities and then stamping those as true.
Even at on the threat of legal action, right? Mm-hmm. Now we're coming to the point where if you don't, like in Ontario, I know there are bills being passed and things like that, or discussed at least, that will basically consider it child abuse if you as the parent, if, for example, if Tristan were to start thinking, well,
that's
maybe
my son.
If Tristan were to start saying, well, maybe I feel like a girl, maybe I am a girl, and you say, and you tell him, no, you're a boy, then the government is going to step in and say, no, you're not fit to be a father because this is child abuse. This is crazy stuff. It's not just that our young people are just struggling with their sense of identity and they're trying to find attention and things like that. Now it's moving on to the government level where the government is actually getting involved and imposing that on everybody.
Do you know, it's been there for a while. In many ways, I think a lot of this took place with the family being destroyed. And you've got, with divorce in particular, and you've got all these broken families, and you've got a school system that's in disrepair, and now you've got a government that is no longer seeing themselves as responsible for teaching your child, you know, math. They now see themselves as responsible for teaching your child morality. But here's the problem, right? you know, which morality are they teaching your child? Are they teaching your child your morality? Well, no, they're teaching your child a secular morality. And what we're finding is that this is just grown, right? This isn't anything new. This has been going on for a long time, but now it's coming into the legal system, right, where it's just it's this beast that's just growing.
Yeah, and it's when we say secular, it's not even the, I mean, the term secular isn't neutral as people think it is. It's de facto atheistic and naturalistic.
That's right.
Right? And if you don't believe me, try bringing in your religion to the government. And especially if it's anything related to Christianity, you'll be laughed out of the room, unless it's Islam, right? Because right now Islam is kind of enjoying this more of the protected sort of a status in popular opinion right now, and also in the government. It's more and more becoming that way.
Which is beyond understandable.
Right.
So the second article is Truth Dead, links Trump to this whole truth issue, right? But I think truth has been dead for a little while.
Yeah, right? A long while.
A long while. Yeah. Yeah. Long while. So, I mean, to bring him into this at this point and say, you know.
This is the irony of it all.
Yeah.
I mean, back when Time came out with their first, you know, God is dead, and all they were doing was just, you know, this was a claim of the Enlightenment. I mean, God died in the Enlightenment. You got Nietzsche, who came out and said it and just said, you know, society just doesn't fully understand the implications of this yet. And now here we are. And it seems as though society still doesn't get the full implications of this, because you've got the irony of Time magazine. Time magazine doesn't even see the irony of the fact that they came out with an article on the beyond he or she, you get to define your own reality and truth is up to you. And then this second article is Truth Dead, and then lambasting Trump for coming up with whatever he wants to be true with regards to his campaign and presidency. And it's like, can you not see that one follows the other?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And we're not endorsing Trump or anything like that here. We're just saying, I mean, the hypocrisy of the media and just our culture in general, right? It's just astounding to me, right? Because on the one hand, yeah, just like you said, you create your own reality. Hey, the words that you're using, men, women, you know, those don't fit my reality and the reality of my friends. I'm going to create this box for myself, and this is going to be my reality. And Trump does something very similar. Hey, you know, I've had the biggest inauguration turnout in the history of whatever, like much bigger than Obama. And he's being laughed at.
Well, right? You know what? It's worse than that, though, Steve, because in the article, that's not even the thing that they bring up. Mm-hmm. In the article, they bring up Trump saying that Obama wiretapped him.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing that's interesting about that. Whenever you see that in the news, you know, Trump and this crazy idea that he was wiretapped. Well, you start reading the article, and in fact, he was wiretapped. Well, at least his campaign was. Mm. Trump's advisor was wiretapped. Did Trump get in on that as well? Well, it seems like on another report that, yeah, he did. But were they trying to wiretap Trump? Well, it doesn't seem as though they were. They're trying to tap his advisor, which was legal, by the way, as a part of his campaign, I guess, to keep tabs on that. And then the question is, well, was that Obama who did that? Mm-hmm. You know, and now we're getting into the nuances of how are you going to read all of that? And Trump's just saying, here's my reality. I'm going to read that wiretapping like this.
Right.
And because I think that's interesting, because I think some people might think, oh, Trump just came up with wiretapping out of the blue and just said, I got wiretapped. Mm-hmm. You know, well, no, he's not. This is one thing, by the way, that's very crafty about Trump, is there's always a hint of truth to what he's doing, and then he tweaks it, right? Because he's going to say, well, here's my reality of what took place. Mm-hmm. But without getting into, you know, the presidency and all that kind of stuff, I'm not trying to wade into that. All I'm saying is you have Time magazine that can't see that they are applying the same logic here, and they don't have a problem with it when it comes to transgender, but they have a problem with it when it comes to politics. They don't want to see that logic used in politics, but they're quite okay with you using that with you creating your own personal reality.
I mean, we talk about being postmoderns and all of that kind of stuff, but that seems pretty modernist to me still, because when it comes to matters of, say, you know, politics or science or technology, nobody is a postmodern. Like they don't argue that. In fact, they people lash out, right? You know, like, you can talk about alternative facts. It's either true or false kind of thing. Or, you know, who's going to argue that water boils at 100 degrees centigrade or something like that. But when it comes to things that are a little bit less, shall we say, verifiable, things like your own sense of gender,
right?
And religion, ethics, you know, morality, all these kinds of things. Now, these are just, you know, you do whatever you want with it. Create a box for yourself, right?
Well, that's the irony though, isn't it? Because this is the part where I get really frustrated with all those scientific naturalists that are out there going, why, where are you in this whole debate? I sure don't hear Dawkins, you know, piping up on any of this going, your genetics seem to say this. Your physical parts scientifically say this, right? Because this is the irony of it all, is because that they don't want the debate to be in that area of the hard sciences. This is what we see and can verify. No. This, like you're saying, Steve, no. This is about the brain and about how is the brain or the mind identifying. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately that becomes the way that you get to shape your reality, is the way that you personally are perceiving who you are and what you are, not just to the extent of your gender, but to the extent of whether or not you're even a human being. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, Terry, we've got these other kin, as they like to call themselves, that identify as, say, a cat and begin to do different things medically to make themselves look like a cat.
Seems to me that this guy that has written the article wants us to believe some truth in his article, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Isn't that true?
And there was a lot of truths in here. I agreed with a lot of things in here, you know?
Speaking of the Trump article.
Speaking about the Trump article. But I found it interesting at the end of the article where it mentioned two philosophers, and they were saying that truth is foundational and that truth has a despotic character. They were basically saying we need facts. This is a foundation in our culture. And
in fact, they said his presidency is going to be judged on the facts, either things that you promised are going to happen or they're not, right? And we're going to look to the facts. So what you see is this ironic double standard, right?
Yeah.
Like at the end, when they say, well, truth is despotic, like it has this way of imposing itself on you, right? I remember the story that Mary Poplin once told when she went to see Dallas Willard giving this lecture. And then he had this Q&A, and this one student came up to him and asked him rather arrogantly, so you talked about truth all night. What is truth? You know, with this sort of an attitude. And Dallas Willard, she said, Mary Poplin said, in his typical, very kind of calm and gentle style, he thought about it for a few seconds and he said, truth is reality. And reality is something you run into when you're wrong.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in our culture right now, you mentioned it about science, right? I mean, we have this fact versus opinion going on, right? Where science is fact, but anything else is opinion, whether it's religious or, you know, whatever. That's a big debate.
I would absolutely agree with you. I mean, that is debatable in of itself. But here's the part that I have a problem with. And that is, you have a society that's saying science is where facts are found, and I'll grant it and say, okay, sure. Well, then show me how this whole transgender thing and the whole other can show me scientifically how that works. Because here's something that's interesting in the Trump article is Time Magazine has a problem with Trump because one of the claims he makes, he founds in the National Enquirer. And they had a problem with that, right? Because why? Well, your source. And so it's interesting to me that we want to see good sources. And right now, we have a scientific community that is in disarray. Now, if you didn't know this, this was published actually recently in The Economist, but a number of articles have been coming out about this. In fact, the most recent numbers I heard was 60% of the science that's coming out right now is unverifiable. That it's not good science. You can't even reproduce it. And what we're finding is that a lot of the scientific community has gotten caught up in their own search for truth and making truth whatever they want it to be that's going to grant them the most financial aid or whatever it might be as they're seeking out grants or whatever that might be. So we've got our own problem happening there. But to get back to this, Terry, that's my thing is you have a society that's saying truth is where science is found, but yet they don't even want to go to the sciences on this because they know they can't base it in the sciences because this is making up your own personal reality. So what you'll often find is them saying, no, we leave the sciences behind on this because this is how I identify.
To me, it almost seems like they're counting on the fact that this is not verifiable. I mean, how am I going to argue with you if you tell me that you identify as a woman?
Or a cheetah.
I just have to take your word for it. And then what's interesting to me is that once you challenge that, like, no, you are a man and you're certainly not a cheetah, you're a human being. And then there's
this— But Steve, what if I do identify as a cheetah?
Right. Well—
Well, now what?
The question is, well, what is a cheetah?
Yeah.
Right? And then we
have to— Or maybe, you know, is Andy mentally okay? Right? Mm. Because clearly Andy is not a cheetah.
Right. A lot of people kind of draw the lines at something like that. You probably remember that interview that this guy did on the university campuses asking people, well, what if I told you that I identified as a woman? Well, the students say, good for you. Well, what if I told you that I identified as Chinese? I'm like, well, you don't look Chinese, but maybe you had a Chinese ancestor. Mm-hmm. Or what if I told you that I was 6 years old? Well.
Right. Or what if I told you I identify as the president of the United States?
Well, clearly not, right? I mean, you got to look at the facts. And you certainly did not go through that process to be elected the president of the United States.
And you don't have his hair.
But aren't we dealing with the same logic?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I mean, science has come to this point where they are, you know, the source of objective truth, really, right? Well, but there's some things in science they can't prove.
Well, and, you know, and in fact, though, Terry, first of all, I'd agree with you.
Yeah, like logic. And like mathematics.
Right. They have to presuppose those.
They have to presuppose those.
But I think that that's why we're in a society right now that's leaving science behind and has moved on to the legal system. Okay. I don't think that we see science as the arbiter of truth anymore. Or if we do, it's on gradient currently and we're moving away from it. And I think instead what you see on all the debates I'm seeing on college campuses is they are not pointing to scientific research anymore because it often, if you watch any Ben Shapiro videos, you see that the research is against them on a lot of these microaggression issues.
So who's pointing to it though? Because you still hear it a lot. Is it from the atheists, the loud atheists?
Well, what I'm starting to hear more and more is pointing to the legal system, and now it's these ad hominem arguments saying, well, Terry, what you said upsets me. And now you've upset the personal reality that I've created for myself, and you don't have the right to do that, Terry.
And I find that more and more, unfortunately, especially on university campuses, the moves that are being made, they're not moves of reason, they're moves of power, right?
Absolutely. Or emotion.
Right. How are we going to have any sort of productive conversation, you know, when at the first sign of any disagreement, I label you a homophobe or a transphobe or Islamophobe?
Notice this, right? This is legal. We're getting into legal ideas, right? Because now we're saying, well, you're a bad person, mm-hmm. right? Because you are, you know, you're racist or whatever it is, or you're homophobic or whatever. And now I'm presupposing that I'm reading your mind, right? And determining that you are this person and you're out to get me.
Right. And we talked briefly about that a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about racism. It's actually pretty difficult to find out whether somebody is actually a racist unless anything short of the person telling you racial slurs and things like that, it's actually not that easy.
Well, this is the problem with the witch hunt, right?
Yeah.
I can point to anyone and say, you're a racist, right? Especially if I've created my own personal reality and I want to protect that personal reality and I don't want anybody intervening in it. If anyone does, well, I just point to him and I say, well, you're a racist. Before we close, I just wanted to bring up the issue that this isn't anything new. I think sometimes it can be discouraging in our culture to see being and living in a time in which truth isn't respected. But this is exactly what Jesus encountered. I mean, we've seen this with the Greeks, right? You have this with the sophists of the day that Jesus experienced, where he's standing before Pilate being questioned. And I think in many ways we feel that way in our own society. You know, we're constantly being questioned. And you have Jesus here. I'm reading out of John chapter 18, verse 37. We have, then Pilate said, "So are you the king?" to Jesus, to which he replies, "You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world to bear witness to the truth." By the way, I love that about Jesus. You know, in Jesus, he's come to tell us what the truth is. And he says, "Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice," to which Pilate responds famously, "Well, what is truth, Jesus?" Right? Because that, I find that this is the challenge that we live in a culture that just, one of the easiest things you could do is you sidestep it and you just begin to twist and distort truth, right? And you ask whether or not it even exists. But in Jesus, we have him just a few chapters before this saying, "Listen, and you want to know what truth is in John chapter 14, I am the truth. I have come to show you the way reality really is." And I think as Christians, we need to take courage in that. Our culture has been doing this for a long time, but we have a great God and a great Jesus that has gone before us, stands for truth, and that we can rally behind, and that we need to continue to follow.
All right, let's wrap it up there. Thank you for joining us, listeners. I hope that was helpful to you. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week.